This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 36.
Whether it be mobile home parks or whether it be apartment complex, I mean, it's always good just from financial wise, right, to always diversify. So even for us, right, we're not putting everything we have in just mobile home parks. I mean, we love the asset and we think it's going to continue to do well. I mean, our ROIs are significantly better on the mobile home parks than we're seeing on apartment complexes and office and mixed use and things like that. But again, right, I mean, it's just trying to make sure we maintain that diversifying that portfolio side of it, as well as, you know, just being cognizant of the financial aspect of it.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below. Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Mike Cab from Average Joe Finances. Just want to talk to you today about Prep Agent. If you're interested in learning how to become a real estate agent and being able to pass the test on your first try, check out Prep Agent. Check out the link below in the show notes or in the video description.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
All right. Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today we're on with Apoorva Shah, and he is the co-founder and managing partner of Jay's Properties LLC. He's an engineer and product manager during the day and a real estate investor by night, even though it's a 24/7 job. He grew up learning about real estate from his father, but wanted to go out and build his own team and company. He started by flipping and wholesaling single family homes and then transitioned fully to multifamily and mobile home park investing, managing a portfolio worth over $30 million. He invests primarily in the New York and North Carolina area, but is looking to expand into South Carolina and Virginia this year. So I'm pretty excited to talk about all that. And Apoorva, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike, for having me.
Absolutely. So, hey, I'd like to start this off with the same question I ask everybody. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and share your story with our listeners?
Sure. So really excited to be here. Thanks, Mike, again. And so I'm Apoorva Shah. I basically got into real estate pretty early on. So I'll start, you know, I'm originally from New York. Started learning about real estate and learning about, you know, investing from my parents. They basically primarily do office buildings and mixed use commercial real estate. And they do a lot of conversions from office space to what we call, I guess, basically mixed use and luxury condos. So when I was in school, I went to school in New York, you know, did engineering, electrical engineering and robotics as my background. And then, you know, was investing and working with my parents during, you know, that time and said, okay, cool. You know, this is awesome. But, you know, I also want to, you know, do engineering. So I got a job for Eaton Corporation as a product manager down south. So I'm based out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And said, okay, cool. You know, I enjoyed doing real estate in the north. And so how can I start doing this myself? So the best way for me, you know, having no money and trying to figure out how to invest on my own, I started wholesaling and flipping single family properties. Met some really great folks and started learning from them here in North Carolina and just between Raleigh and the Triangle area. You know, we flipped probably 20 properties, built up a nice capital stack, and then said, okay, hey, let's completely transition out of single family because it is getting incredibly competitive in the areas that we're currently investing in, and transition into commercial real estate with multifamily and also mobile home parks. You know, during the day, obviously still an engineer, product manager for a engineering company here. And, you know, want to continue to invest and build relationships, teach other folks about investing in real estate and seeing how we can continue to help others.
All right. Awesome. Hey, so how long did you flip and wholesale houses when you were, so you did about 20 properties, you said, right before you transitioned. How long did it take you to do those 20 properties?
Sure. So yeah, that was about 3 years, three and a half years of commitment, you know, just going at it, looking for properties, driving around. You know, one of my partners at the time, he was just on the phone nonstop. And we got to a spot where we started hiring some interns who would just be calling, and they were also college students. And, you know, we'd give them commissions and things like that for incentivizing, hey, you know, if we close on the next property, you get some X money. It was definitely a great time, especially three and a half years ago, just because there wasn't as much competition. I mean, that was right. the big deterrent. Now it's, you know, everyone wants to flip houses, everyone wants to wholesale it or be a part of real estate. So that's right. Kind of what really got us to transition out.
Okay. And so, you know, I guess was it particularly for North Carolina, just how competitive the local market was getting?
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of the properties that we would go after were Raleigh, Chapel Hill, Durham, outskirts of Raleigh, Holly Springs, things like that. And, you know, cities like that, where folks would, they were completely okay with making $2,000 on a $100,000 plus investment. And for us, we were like, whoa, you know, this is a, you know, if something goes wrong, if, you know, you find that you uncover a pipe that bursts or something like that, you know, $2,000 will get eaten up pretty quickly. So it was really just based on location. And, you know, there's a lot of money in North Carolina. So for us, we were like, okay, well, let's look at different avenues for investing in real estate.
Right. Yeah. $2,000 off of a $100,000 investment. I mean, that a 2% return is not the greatest. You're better off putting your stuff in a savings account. Well, not really, but yeah, that's amazing. And I can see that, you know, getting to that point where you're doing these flips or wholesaling deals for such a small return. And at this time you built up a team, right? So it's not even really worth your time at that point. So that transition to multifamily, that was a very smart move. Now, so you were living off of your 9-to-5, right? So that was paying the bills, and you were stacking up your profits from doing these flips and wholesale deals, right?
Correct. Yeah. So the story behind that, I mean, it was definitely a tough beginning. Right, coming out of school, you know, you're super new to the world. You're trying to live on your own, and for me, every dollar that I made, I reinvested into my business. And while it may have worked for me, and it worked for us, you know, it may not work for everyone else. You know, especially someone who's supporting a family. You know, I didn't have kids, I wasn't married. It was just looking out for myself. And because of that, you know, I was able to work, you know, 17, 18 hour days, barely sleep, and you know, be working on the properties, be with their contractors, and really just networking as much as I could. And also, we didn't have COVID, right? three years ago, which are, or I guess 6 years ago at this point. That was, you know, great. I mean, it really helped launch the company, launch where we are now. And, you know, while we've had different partners and different deals that we've worked on, it's been an awesome, awesome transition.
You know, one of the questions I want to ask you is what made you make the switch from flipping properties to get into multifamily? But, you know, we've kind of knocked that one down. But I want to ask you before we start talking about your multifamily investments, what was your favorite flip or wholesale experience? Or like, what was the best deal that you guys found?
Yeah, that's definitely a great question. So I would actually say one of our first deals that we flipped was one, the most profitable, and we learned the most about it. So imagine 6 years ago, brand new, you know, we're probably what, 23 years old at the time, didn't know much about houses, didn't know much about plumbing, electrical, things like that. And, you know, we said, okay, hey, my two other partners, we put together, I think it was like 50,000 or 60,000 at the time. And then we knew, hey, it's probably going to be about 30,000 in renovation. So at the end of the day, I mean, it was probably that first deal. We learned so much about, you know, doing how to renovate, right? That's the first thing. It was an amazing experience, you know, even though it was long hours and really just trying to figure out everything, every little nook and cranny about the house. Are contractors trying to rip us off, or, you know, trying to build those relationships too? While we were building relationships with contractors, you also have to look at building relationships with brokers and other real estate investors and agents. So it was kind of like a full-time job with trying to manage, you know, our 9-to-5 job, the W-2 income side of it, but also the entire business aspect. You know, I say that first house because one, it was just spectacular to see the finishes. And also, you know, it was a bittersweet moment. We're like, okay, finally, we're about to sell this thing. And I think what we cleared $85,000 or something like that on the first flip. And that's just what got us wow. really, really hungry. We're like, we need to do this. We have to keep build this and keep doing more and more deals.
Yeah. I mean, if that doesn't get you hooked, I don't know what will, right? That's phenomenal. $85,000 on your first flip. That's amazing. And that's also with all those lessons learned too, right? I'm sure there was probably some money left on the table since this was your first time doing this and, you know, between contractors and things like that. And I get what you're saying, right? When you're trying to build that team and you find that initial, your GCs and everything, your general contractors, you have to do your due diligence on them, right? Make sure you're screening these folks right. Otherwise you can really put yourself up that creek without a paddle, right?
So, exactly.
That's, I mean, well done, to get that large of a return for your first one. Now, can I ask you how much was that property? What are the numbers looking like here?
Yeah. So if I go back, I think we purchased it for about 60. We probably put in about 35, maybe 30,000. And then I think we sold it for maybe 190, maybe 200, somewhere in that range.
Wow.
Of course, you know, closing costs and things like that, but I think that's about where we were.
Very nice. Was this in North Carolina?
Correct. Yeah. So this was Garner, North Carolina.
And this was your first time doing anything in this market, right?
You just moved down
to North Carolina, just getting the party started.
Exactly. Yeah. This is probably 6 months into me moving down here, you know, just meeting these great folks. I mean, for me, it was, look, originally, even before starting flipping houses and things like that, I was like, well, I just want to buy a house with a couple of my buddies and possibly rent it out. And when I was down here, when I first moved down here, I had roommates. And those roommates were like, hey, would you want to flip a house? Or like, you know, it's cool to live in a house and stuff like that, but would it make sense for us to go in on a deal and try to flip something? And to me, I thought, hey, you know, that's a great idea. Let's pull together every penny that we have and go all in, right? So it was scary, that's for sure. I mean, I remember eating probably peanut butter sandwiches for 3 months straight, you know, not partying, not, you know, a typical 23-year-old or 24-year-old, just, you know, we're literally working nonstop trying to build this thing.
Yeah, but I mean, how is that changing your diet much from the college diet that you just had, right?
That's true. That is true.
Right on. So, okay, so now we transition, right? So you built up enough capital to start looking at multifamily properties. So what was your first multifamily property that you purchased?
So the first one is actually a mobile home park. About 2 years ago, or maybe 3 years ago now. It was a mobile home park in Michigan. So great opportunity. One of my buddies, he found the deal. He said, hey, look, Borva, you know, there's a great opportunity in Michigan. You know, let's try to take it down. I ran the numbers. For me, the underwriting process was pretty easy at that point, you know, just from understanding, you know, what you're looking at for in real estate, and just started reading a bunch of books and understanding exactly what you need to do in terms of, you know, from an operation standpoint to what your cash flow should look like, and kind of building those models. For me, it's really all about building processes to make this as easy as possible. And just saying, okay, hey, here's a, you know, it felt like a low risk deal. Cause I mean, at that time it was, I think $550,000 is what the purchase price was for 63 mobile home lots. And so for us, we were like, okay, well, let's do this, because it was going to be seller financed. So lower risk, you know, we didn't have recourse debt on that thing. You know, we started adding value. Me being based in North Carolina, I didn't fly out there at all. We had a team on the ground. We had an on-site property manager that kind of built the systems and knew exactly what what to look for and deposit all the money and took care of the day to day. And he was just really like, he loved his job. He loved being a property manager.
And did he come with the property? Was he the one that was already in place?
So he was, yeah. So he was helping the previous owner, but the previous owners, you know, I think the way we got it was just, I think, cold calling. My partner at the time was cold calling, and he found the deal and said, hey, look, like this person is just getting quite a bit old, and there's a mom and pop owner, and they really just didn't want to deal with it. They didn't want to invest back in the park. It was just deferred maintenance. There's a lot of value to be had. There's rent that we were going to increase. There's just a lot of different, you know, things that were working in our favor. So for us, you know, we went into it. I think it was, we held on to it for really maybe 2 years. That $50,000 investment turned into $1.5 million. That's what, I mean, we sold it for that. So
wow.
huge returns on that side of it. And then, you know, it started trickling. We were like, okay, this is great. You know, mobile home park space is amazing, especially in the central region of the United States. But let's try to, you know, bring it back home. Let's bring this to North Carolina. What can we do? And then I met a really great partner here. His name's Jack Yen. He's a data analyst, data scientist guy. Loves what he does. And for him, his day job's trying to cure cancer, which is really cool, which is really awesome on his side of it. So for him and I, we started creating an exclusive partnership where every deal we do together, we're going to try to figure out how to include each other. For him, what his I guess portion of it is really learning and understanding all the data, all the research behind the property and the numbers. For him, he just gets that instantly. I mean, he's able to pull population, how the property is likely going to be doing in the next couple of years. And then for me, I started concentrating more on the operations, making sure, you know, our contractors, we have the processes in place if something happens, and then started hiring out for property managers and kind of building out that entire portfolio side of it.
That first multifamily deal as well, another win-win-win-win. You know, one for price, two, you were able to sell or finance it. That's phenomenal. And then three, that huge return at the end when you turn around and sold it for 1.5. I mean, that's a great ROI, to say the least. So yeah. now, you know, so now you have a larger amount of capital to start doing what you did in North Carolina. So that's amazing stuff. Now, from what I understand, you said, well, you know, looking at your background, you have right now a portfolio of 30 million, right? So what does that mostly consist of? Do you have more mobile home parks? Do you have more apartments? Like what does that portfolio look like broken down?
Sure. So majority of our, you know, from a capital perspective, we have a lot of it in mixed use and office space.
Okay. And so straight up commercial properties.
Exactly, straight up commercial properties in New York, and you know that those are deals that, you know, we've invested with our family, and since my family's still in New York, I said, okay, hey, like we've built out enough, and said, okay, let's start investing in their deals and start working together, synergizing, and seeing how we can continue to build even bigger. So a lot of that's in New York, and then from our North Carolina perspective and Southeast perspective of investing. We have over 200 units in between apartment complexes as well as mobile home parks, and looking at, you know, primarily now focusing in more on mobile home parks and a little bit of multifamily and apartment complex, but we're seeing, you know, that is a more competitive market here, especially in North Carolina.
So, okay, I have to ask, because I know competition for commercial space in New York has got to be wicked hard. Right. So are you investing more in the city, or is it more of like in the suburbs like Long Island and maybe outside of Manhattan?
Sure. Yeah. So great question there. So we're investing more in the suburbs. So Eastern Long Island or middle Long Island is where the sweet spot is. What we're seeing is there's actually a big demand for housing over there. So a lot of the office space, and I'm sure everyone knows, you know, office is not doing as well as right. You know, we'd like it to do. So the big push there is converting office space into luxury apartments. So there's a lot of opportunity in Long Island where, you know, young folks that, you know, may not, you know, have enough to purchase a house, because in Long Island, you know, homes are just insanely expensive.
Yes.
But they want to, they do well. They're professionals where they can get a luxury apartment. So the city is definitely, you know, trying to work with a lot of investors on doing a lot of those conversions.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, because a lot of folks, you know, they're not really staying in the city that much anymore. They've migrated more to the suburbs. So that's definitely a better target market for that, because you don't have to go too far to do your job for most of those larger companies that are out of Manhattan now. A lot of these folks are teleworking. So it's hurt, you know, real estate in some of the larger cities like New York, San Francisco, and things like that. But it's created more opportunity for others in the suburbs and outlying areas. So, you know, it's all about finding where the market's moving to and then, you know, taking advantage of that and exploiting that. So you guys are making the right moves to get to where you need to for your continued success. So that's awesome.
And I guess one of the items here, I mean, you just hit the nail on the head there. Basically with folks moving out of New York or New York City and San Francisco, a lot of folks are moving down to the Southeast. Right, Southeast United States. And one of the reasons we're investing now primarily in the Southeast is to kind of help push, you know, that affordable housing side of it. And the reason we like affordable housing is, you know, it's kind of a soft spot for us. You know, we didn't start with much, right? We were basically living out of our cars, trying to flip houses and building this business. And as there's a lot of developers here in North Carolina and South Carolina, Georgia, all these areas that are basically pushing to build these luxury apartments, build you know, Class A properties. And for us, we still want to keep some affordable housing. So for us, we definitely want to make that change, continue having affordable housing for, you know, in mobile home park space, as well as, you know, Class C apartment complexes.
Let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors. What's going on, Average Joes? We know that managing one account or your entire family's portfolio can be stressful and time-consuming. From building and maintaining spreadsheets, calculating how many new shares and units you need to purchase with your contributions, finding the time to log into your brokerage and make those trades, and annually rebalancing each account. Well, my friends over at Passive came up with a tool that can help you manage all of this in a fraction of time without spreadsheets and manual calculations. Passive is a portfolio management tool that makes it easier for DIY investors to maintain a balanced portfolio and build a passive investment strategy at their online broker. It eliminates the need to use spreadsheets, saves you from having to log into your broker to place trades, and helps you stick to your portfolio's target allocation. Elite users can save even more time by using the one-click trades feature and having Passive execute the required trades on your behalf. All of this can be done from the Passive dashboard for all of your accounts. No more logging in to multiple brokerage accounts. Passive is not a robo-advisor. It won't tell you what you should invest in, so you'll need to decide that for yourself, either through self-education or alongside a financial advisor. To learn more about Passive or to sign up, check out our link below, www.averagejoefinances.com/passive. That's P-A-S-S-I-V with no E. Again, P-A-S-S-I-V with no E. Check them out. What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about Wealth Tender. If you are a finance content creator, whether that's a blog, a podcast, you're a financial advisor or a financial coach, I highly recommend you check out Wealth Tender. Wealth Tender is building a database of all the top finance blogs, podcasts, and the financial advisors and financial coaches that they have on there are vetted and top-notch. So we actually had the pleasure of hosting Brian Thorpe, the CEO and founder of Wealth Tender, on Average Joe Finance's podcast episode 25. Go check out that episode, listen to his story, and listen to him talk about the database that he's building. It's really phenomenal stuff. So if you're interested in checking out the directory, or if you're a finance content creator and you're interested in joining up with the directory, go to the link below in the show notes or check out www.averagejoefinances.com/wealthtender. Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Again, too, it's all about you know, what market you're targeting and where are you providing value to the community, right? And by being able to provide, you know, some Class C properties, maybe some B minus, and, you know, you provide a value to the local community. Providing affordable housing is a great thing to do. It's, you know, it's commendable for what it is that you guys are doing. And on top of that, it's you broaden your horizon and you broaden your market. So I want to ask you if you can tell me what you believe are the pros and the cons to multifamily or even mobile home park investing. What do you think are the great things that come out of it versus some of the things that are a little more difficult to deal with?
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Great questions. And we get asked that quite a bit, especially with some of our investors. They're like, well, why are you going after mobile home parks? And the biggest answer, the best answer I have, is because it is recession resilient, right? So during COVID and during, you know, when the market's dipping and things like that, even in 2008, mobile home parks were the strongest asset for investors, for real estate investors. And, you know, a great example is for our team, you know, we're at 95-98% one occupancy, but then also in collections, right? So collections were a big factor. In some of our Class B or even some of the Class A side of it, we saw a pretty large dip in collections. So for us, you know, we were like, well, let's concentrate more on that Class C. Let's see what they need, right? A lot of them are working class folks, and which is awesome. You know, we want to support that, you know, and give back to that community. So we started programs for a lot of our tenants, you know, saying, okay, if you're going through a tough time, we totally understand. Let's work together. Let's figure out what we can do as landlords, and see how we can support the community. Make sure, you know, we don't want people to just have to pay rent and not be able to eat food. So for us, it was really just trying to give back, try to understand what's happening. But overall, mobile home parks and Class C apartment complexes were definitely more recession resilient versus, you know, the fancier apartments, in our opinion.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great pro right there. You know, a lot of folks, that's the biggest struggle right now is, you know, you see there's also a lot of, I guess, resentment towards landlords. And, you know, you see a lot of people calling for, you know, these rent strikes and everything. And, you know, I never heard of any of that happening near mobile home parks. So it's mostly like on those big apartments and things like that. So yeah, I can see that. That's pretty awesome, man.
To touch on the con, because with any investment, right, there's always two sides.
Always.
With apartment complexes, it is definitely more, or sorry, with mobile home parks, it's definitely more hands-on. It's not for us, it's not a passive investment by any means. You know, we have to go to the properties. We have to talk to our tenants. You know, sure, we have staff, obviously, that deals with the day-to-day. But at the end of the day, it's still on us to make sure we're providing safe, affordable housing to these tenants, right? I mean, we don't want to do deferred maintenance just because, you know, their folks aren't paying and things like that. But it's about creating a safe community, right? And I think the biggest con there is the fact that you have to be a lot more hands-on. And it's a con, it's also a pro. Some folks love being hands-on with their investments, and that's great. That's why, you know, we ask folks, hey, you know, invest in our team, invest in the properties that we have. It becomes a completely passive investment for our investors. But at the same time, for our team, you know, it is by no means considered passive.
Right on. That's a great point. And so there's something else I want to ask you, right? And this doesn't necessarily have to be you. This could be someone you know, but what would you say are some of the biggest mistakes that real estate investors or someone you might know have made, you know, things that you have seen?
I think a great example is even for myself. I've made plenty of mistakes in real estate
or
someone I know. Yes. But the big thing is not looking at the numbers or not having a good understanding of those numbers. It's great, you know, on paper, everything looks awesome. You know, you could be saying, oh, this property is having a positive cash flow of 100,000, but what does that 100,000 really mean? Right. Or what does that number specifically mean? really being able to dig in, do your due diligence. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Any property you buy, whether it be single family, or you're buying a house, you're buying a condo, even for my personal home, I did a ton of due diligence on it. I want to make sure I'm buying an asset that is one supporting exactly what that, you know, what the paper is saying, and do I have a business plan in place that I can execute on for, you know, my team, and can I, you know, transition what that paper is in real life. So I think that's the biggest thing. You know, I've seen investors, you know, lose their shirt on a lot of investments just because they're like, oh, hey, they saw the paper number and they said, okay, cool, great, let's invest all in, let's go. And it's very unfortunate when you see that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of ties into the next question I wanted to ask you. And I think you hit a lot of these. So just add in anything else that you want to add in. But what are some strategies that you have personally used to mitigate risks in your own investments?
Sure. Yeah, definitely a great question. So for us, it's all about process. The same process that I'm using on some, you know, on our mobile home parks, that transitions to all of that portfolio, everything in the mobile home park space. So for us, we love using on-site property managers. I like hiring local folks. I as much as it makes our lives easier, if we went ahead and said, hey, here's a big property management company that's going to run all our portfolio, it might make our lives easier. But the thing is, at the end of the day, it hurts our cash flow. It also hurts the tenant aspect of it. They're not building relationships. They're basically this big overlaying entity that just collects the money and has, you know, you talk to them with issues. And so for us, we like to use local talent. We like to use local contractors. And I mean, that's been the biggest play for our success. You know, we've had a lot of folks that just believed in us, including, you know, local banks. You know, we've used some larger banks for our lending and things like that, but just really conveying the story and that business plan and saying, hey, we are going to do exactly what we are going to say. So that's been a huge, huge thing.
Yeah. You know, I hear that a lot when it comes to like using local banks and using local lenders more than, you know, some of the big banks and lenders that you see out there. And I think a lot of it has to do is with, you know, you're adding that personal touch and you're adding, you know, value to the community versus bringing some outside, you know, I guess, larger corporate bank, you know, in there to bring the money to the table. You know, when you're staying local, a lot of times they tend to say yes more, right, than if you go outside. And I think that's pretty good, especially when you're showing them, you know, your business plan and what value you're bringing to the community, you know, and could even bring them more business as you're bringing more folks in to, you know, providing, you know, an area for them to live. I mean, that could potentially be more customers for the bank as well. That's definitely something I've heard a lot. So I definitely want to say thank you for that. Now, you know, your process, right? Hiring local, both the contractors and property managers. I mean, I think that's 100% the right way to go. I mean, a lot of people like to self-manage, right? But I think, you know, if you're bringing in more people from the local community, again, it's about adding that value to the community. It just gives you, you know, a better reputation, a better name when you're out there and you want to go get that next investment property. Who knows? You might get some really good referrals from the folks that you've hired, right? They might say, hey, yeah, I know another property manager over here that the owner is getting ready to sell it because they're getting a little bit older and they just don't want to deal with it anymore. Like kind of how you ran into that your first mobile park deal. Another thing I want to circle back to, you know, something that you said about some of the pros of mobile home park investing is how it's been recession resistant, right? And, you know, you're at 95 to 98% occupancy and collections. I mean, that's phenomenal numbers where you see a lot of folks in that are investing in just apartments, like just multifamily. They're hovering around in the 80s, some of them even low enough, you know, lower into the 70s. And that really dips into the pockets when you're at that point. So that's definitely something that if someone's considering mobile home park investing, that's definitely something to consider, especially given what we've seen happen this past year. Are we going to bounce back and, you know, we'll see more a higher occupancy and collections ratio in multifamily apartments? I 100% believe that. you know, but this is still something to consider. I mean, another pandemic can happen. This seems to happen like every 5 to 10 years. We have something like this that happens. This one just so happens to be the worst one, or maybe we've reacted a little more than we have in the past. Having some type of, I guess, asset in your back pocket that's going to keep you safe and afloat is very important. So,
I mean, without a doubt, I to all your listeners, right? I mean, I believe in diversifying, right? There's whether it be mobile home parks or whether it be apartment complex. I mean, it's always good just from financial wise, right? To always diversify. So, even for us, right? We're not putting everything we have in just mobile home parks. I mean, we love the asset and we think it's going to continue to do well. I mean, our ROIs are significantly better on the mobile home parks than we're seeing on apartment complexes and office and mixed use and things like that. But again, right, I mean, it's just trying to make sure, maintain that diversifying that portfolio side of it, as well as, you know, just being cognizant of the financial aspect of it.
Yes, absolutely. The strategies that you're talking about to mitigate these risks in your investments, I think are spot on for, you know, for somebody who's just looking to get into this. I mean, I know you mentioned, you know, what you're doing for your investors and how it becomes, you know, 100% passive for your investors, right? So I'm assuming you're talking about, you know, some syndications that you guys are doing where you bring the investors in and they help you fund the project that you're doing. So that's definitely something to consider if somebody's looking for someone who, you know, is going to do their due diligence and get you a return on your investment. Maybe Jay's Properties is a good one to look at.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I'm going to give you a plug, man, because, you know, it's the reason why I ask you these questions. And, it's you guys are really doing the right thing and taking the right steps. I have to ask you this, though. That first mobile home park kind of fell into your lap, right? After that, how did you decide, or your company decide, which market to focus on? Because now I know you said you're going to start looking at South Carolina and Virginia this upcoming year. What kind of factors did you guys take into account to decide to focus on that market?
So location is probably the biggest thing for us. There's different ways in real estate to make money, right? There's forced appreciation. There's just passive cash flow or cash flow. And then there's also just, you know, from the time when you sell it, which basically goes hand in hand with forced appreciation. But at the end of the day, for us, as we're looking at North Carolina, we see it's pretty saturated. There's a lot of investors. There's a lot of eyes on North Carolina specifically, you know, and especially in the locations that are, you know, what we call incredibly hot or major metro areas. You know, you got Charlotte, you have Greensboro, Greenville, Raleigh, Durham, all those areas, right? We try to invest in basically near major metro areas. And because of that, we're saying, okay, look, there's a limited inventory here, but let's go into South Carolina, let's go into Virginia, let's see what they have. You know, there's still great markets in those states, but let's try to expand that search. You know, we've seen folks buy mobile home parks at 3 cap, right? That's unheard of, but there's a lot of private equity that's looking, you know, private equity money that's looking into mobile home parks. I mean, you can see, like, I think BlackRock invested over $200 million in mobile home parks. And there's a lot of large institutional money that's being put into this asset class. And as we're continuing to grow and continuing to learn about real estate and, you know, working with our investors, we want to continue providing them with superior returns than, you know, if you were to invest in the stock market or you know, just throw it into a mutual fund of you know, maybe 6 to 8% a year. And for us, the big thing here is providing secure real estate investing for our investors, for ourselves, because every real estate deal I do, I'm going to put some money in, right? I don't want it to feel like, okay, hey, I'm taking all this money in from other investors and things like that, and I have no skin in the game. And it gives our investors definitely a greater, you know, like, oh, hey, okay, this person actually has skin in the game. This person is going to really do exactly what they're going to say and try to execute that business plan in the best way possible. Of course, there's risk. There's tenants and things, you know, that you have some bad apples and things like that happen. But we want to do everything we can to mitigate that. And for us, as we continue to expand, you know, South Carolina and Virginia, I mean, that's been the big thing for us to continue to build those relationships in those states as well.
besides location, I see that, you know, as like a big factor. You know, you're talking about limited inventory and just, you know, what the availability is looking like, right? Do you take into account like, you know, other things such as like businesses opening up, or like, you know, like you know that there's a Walmart Supercenter that's going to open up somewhere in Virginia, and you know, hey, this is going to open up a lot of jobs, which is going to cause people to move to the area, or like, oh, hey, I heard there's going to be an Amazon warehouse getting built over here. You know, is that stuff that you guys also take into consideration?
Most definitely. Yeah. So that is definitely huge, right? I mean, if you have a location that may not have a massive population, but there's a lot of jobs, or there's a lot of like basically commuter traffic, that's huge, right? I mean, the Amazon warehouse is a great example, right? So for us, we started investing in Garner, North Carolina. It's a growing city, not necessarily Raleigh, but it's growing, and there's an Amazon warehouse. So folks that actually invested there maybe 3 or 4 years ago are seeing significant force appreciation on their money, on their single family houses, on their mobile home parks, apartment complex, or you know, whatever asset class they're invested in. So that's huge. I mean, those are typically longer term plays. You're not going to see that overnight, but we're definitely doing research. Jack does a lot of that research for us, where he's just scouring the internet, finding, okay, where's the next hot spot to invest in, or what's the right place to be in.
Right. Yeah. I would hope he is. He's a data scientist, right? So that's his forte right there. So that's amazing. Yeah. Looks like you have like a really good team built to go out and conquer this. So that's good stuff, man. So I have one more question I'd like to ask you, and this is probably the most important question out of all the questions I've asked you. Are you ready for this one?
Let's do it.
Okay. Where can people find more information about you? Do you have a website or social media, anything like that? Where can people find out about Jay's properties?
Yeah. So I'll start with me, right? I'm Apurva Shah, APURVA, last name Shah, SHAH. Find me on LinkedIn, you know, find me on Facebook or Instagram or whatever way you want to connect with me. Also, definitely check out our website, right? That's the number one, especially if you're trying to invest with us, if you want to partner with us, or just learn real estate. I mean, we'd love to connect and see how we can help you. That's Jay's Investments jaysinvestments.com. So, you know, we're on social media, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Facebook. So definitely reach out to us. It's, you know, I'm always excited. I'm always open to, you know, partnering with other folks.
You heard it. That's where you go to find some more information on Apurva and also on Jay's properties. We'll make sure we have all those links in the show notes to his social media profiles, as well as his website. So for those of you that want to check it out or might be interested in investing with them, we'll have it all available for you. So, hey, Apurva, again, absolute pleasure having you on, talking with us today. I greatly appreciate you coming on.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Joe. Mike, I, hey, average Joe that, finances, right?
That happens all the time. My middle name's Joe, so that's fine. So it happens all the time. All right. Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Out of here.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.
The Average Joe Finances Podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Do not use this for any real estate or investment making decisions. All views by myself or our guests are solely our own and do not reflect the opinion of our employers.